and I can imagine things. I can outthink the cops. I can out-imagine the right wing. I can stomp on the neocons. And so you have to find the, you know, what's gonna blow up your imagination. So we've talked about, then you look to the artists for us, the culture drives politics. And a lot of people say, well, politics drives culture. That's sort of the Marxist idea, I think, if I understand it correctly, where, you know, every product of the capitalist system has a capitalist imprint, and you can't escape it, and so forth. But I don't think that's true, and we come from the idea that most of politics, if you just look on the surface at what politicians say in speeches, how they talk to each other, and what you start seeing what metaphors they use. You know, George Lakoff talks about this, I think. I haven't read his books, but I assume he's talking about it. He goes, you know, do they see the world in terms of black and white? Do they see the world in terms of the Gunsmoke TV serial that they grew up on? Or do they see the world in a different, you know, what informs their thinking? And it usually has to do with stories. I mean, all these, Christians, who make up quite a bit of the power in the country, all come to politics from a story. The story is the New Testament. You know, the neocons apparently come from Gunsmoke, according to that Power of Nightmare documentary, which is everyone should watch. It's available on the internet. You can watch it streaming. Maybe Robbie will show it here, hopefully. And I mean this is serious. Like, the original neocon dude, that was the show he came home every week to watch, and he explained to his students why Gunsmoke was important, and informs their worldview in a very real way. So what we do in Arthur is we look for events or artists or movements or philosophers or whatever, theorists, who, instead of thinking in these sort of black and white or gray or monochrome, mono gray terms, are sort of capability to blow your mind. They blow your mind, and then they expose. And when your mind is blown, you see all the colors. You see more colors, at least, hopefully. And what I mean specifically is, like, one of the issues that I brought to give away, and I think there's still some more copies over there, is like an issue we did about the 1967 march on the Pentagon, which some people know about, some people know about and forgot, some people, blah, blah, blah. But we put this out right before the election. I think it was right after, last year, maybe after the Republican convention. Yeah, it was after the Republican convention. And our point in putting this thing out of, I'll talk, about what was it? It was sort of to that point, a culmination, or the most audacious manifestation of the anti-war current that was starting to surge through America in the Sixth Vietnam War. You had people protesting against the Vietnam, almost from the moment the troops landed there. And you had people, you had intellectuals, and you had poets, and you had artists, and you had right-on Christians and other religious figures who were protesting against the war very early. But they couldn't really get going. They were like, they couldn't get much traction. They were just seen as cuckoos, seen as naive people, not realistic people. And, gradually, with the draft, more the students got more interested and so forth. And what happened was, in 1967, was the anti-war movement decided, we're gonna have a big gathering at the National Mall in Washington. And they brought in this guy, Jerry Rubin, who knew all this, was part of the West Coast contingent and knew all the students and was like getting active in the SDS, which was a group of students and left-wingers. And they brought him in, and he came in to help them get bigger numbers. And he brought in Abby Hoffman, whose book you read from earlier. And what they, Abby came in with an idea that he poached from somebody on the West Coast, in a, you know, sort of the idea that, you know, the Pentagon is a five-sided object, and it's on this, which, and it has all these sort of, if you want to look at it a certain way, from an occult angle, the Pentagon was like sort of this special locus of evil. And I mean, obviously, you don't have to be an occultist to see it, but if you do come from the occultist angle, then you have a whole set of there's a whole lot of symbolism going on. You know, oh, it's a five-sided thing. It's like the pentagram. Oh, blah blah blah. There's evil going on. There's it's built between these certain roads and so forth. And they got the idea. Well, what do you do if you have a building where evil is going on? Well, you have an exorcism. And you just, and so they designed, you know, somewhere along the line, they designed an exorcism, and they said, they announced that very seriously, Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin and some other people announced that they were going to levitate the Pentagon, and a certain number of feet, which they'd agreed to with the government, and they were going to surround it and do all this stuff, and blah, blah, blah. And at the time, you know, it was, and they said, we're going to have tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of hippies and angry students and right on people out there going, and we're going to do this. And they didn't have these people. They were just bluffing. But because they said that, the government started to take them seriously and started to say, well, you've got to get a permit to raise the Pentagon off the ground. We need to negotiate. I mean, you know, how long is it going to be off the ground? What about the stairs? You know, and but it also, what happened was they'd hit on something, which was, it makes people laugh. It fires your imagination. When you think about the Pentagon lifting off the ground, you think about it as a locus of evil. That's of evil that's existed before the Pentagon existed. That it's something that in every generation, perhaps, there's this group of warmongering beasts who occasionally come to power, and they have to be dealt with. And when you started talking in those terms, it suddenly became extremely an attractive event. And they did get hundreds of thousands of people there, and shit went down. And it kept going down until the war ended. So, you know, we're looking at these pretty pathetic protests at the Republican convention and saying, you know, you can do better. If they could do this in the 60s, when there was only 150 million people in this country, and now there's almost 300 million, and you've got, you're so supposedly so organized with your flash mobs and your move on and stuff, and all you can do is like rappel off buildings and for cable access viewers, you know, maybe you can put something a little more on it, you know, like these guys did. And here's how the guys, men and women, here's how they did it. You know, it was a lot of group thinking, it was a lot of group planning, it was a lot of people working for no money. It was a lot of people doing serious hallucinogens together. A lot of it was done in the spirit of serious fun. And that is something that is, I believe, is missing from the so-called anti-war movement right now. A funny addendum, a timely thing actually about this is that this week, my mind was blown by Donald Rumsfeld, our psychedelic Secretary of Defense, who literally said at a press conference on a Monday or Tuesday, a press briefing, he went over all the, you know, how many people had died that day, denied that the U.S. would withdraw, troops had plans, and that the vote was going forward, and so forth. And then he said, oh, by the way, the Department of Defense is going to be, one more note, the Department of Defense will be holding a march and concert on September 11th. Did you guys pick this up on this? I mean, I hope, you know, some people heard about it, like, oh yeah, I heard about that on KPFK. You look at you can go to the Department of Defense website and read the transcript of the press briefing, and not one reporter asked him a question like, what are you talking about? Are you serious? And actually, they are serious because we know they're serious because they have a website. But they are actually doing this. They are going to have a march that begins in the south parking lot of the Pentagon, that goes past the Arlington Cemetery, goes for 2 miles, past Arlington Cemetery and some of our wonderful war monuments in Washington, D.C., and ends up at the National Mall where all the gathered will apparently be serenaded by Clint Black, the country musician. And the main reaction, the people who did, you know, I only read it, why did I read about this? It was on the Drudge Report, you know, the big left-wing website. And the Drudge Report, which said, picked it up for the New York Daily News. And I started looking into this, and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? You know, what does this mean? The Department of Defense is holding a parade. I mean, what does this remind you of? I mean, this is, and you start thinking, when the military is holding parades, that's like stuff that happens in, like, Pinochet, Chile. That's what happens in 1936 Germany, Nuremberg. Does anyone remember this stuff? You know, that's what they're doing. The military is showing you who's boss. They're throwing parties for themselves, and what are we? What can you know? This seems to me pretty dangerous. This isn't a good sign. When historically, when these sorts of things are done, bad shit happens later. I mean, you wouldn't say, well, the party in Nuremberg 1936 was a failure, or their jamboree didn't lead to anything, it wasn't part of anything bigger. No, it got worse. So that's going on. At the same time, I was watching Yoko Ono talking, and she was like, because she's going to be performing at our festival, and I've been looking into her recent activities out of interest, and she was talking about how recently she's been sad. And worried because she speaks very simply, but she says these very profound things. And she was talking about how much fear, how much stress, how much depression was out there because of the power of those who want to make war, how much power they have right now. And she said she had become very sympathetic in the last couple of years to the plight of people in Germany in, say, 1940, because before she'd been very contemptuous of those people. How could they not know what was going on? Why didn't they do anything? The intellectuals, the artists, the smart ones in Germany. How did they not? Why didn't they do more to stop it before it got worse? And she said, you know, before she'd sort of had this sort of disdain for those people because there were those people there, but now she said that she had a great deal of sympathy for them because she didn't take into account how quickly these people move, how fast they are, and how when the opportunity comes, they move in and seize it. So with that in mind, I started looking at this Pentagon, this Department of Defense Walk for Freedom or something. And I mean, it's like America, you know, Walk for Freedom. And I said, well, what can we do about this? And my idea or whatever is like, don't protest this thing. Don't have a counter demonstration, join it. In order to march, everyone who's marching, you have to sign up on the website. You have to give them your name, phone number, email address, and your t-shirt size. I don't know. Which is kind of good, because it makes me think like, oh, they're going to give everybody t-shirts there, so we all look alike. Which would be good for those of us who want to fit in with the rest and then have our way with the parade. And I think that's what we should do. Whoever is able to be there should sign up to volunteer to coordinate the thing. They actually have these on the website. You can help out. Well, help. You know, sign up to walk. And don't walk. Sit down. Or walk backwards. Or bump into other people. Or start, or chant, or do, or think of something. Use the techniques that people have used in the past to come up with ideas to approach this challenge, because this is a big deal. So that's kind of what we try to, that kind of thinking or ideas or whatever are in the, it's kind of the general hope I have for the anti-war movement in this country and the culture. Now, with, tell me if I'm talking too much, but I said in the thing, like, oh, I have some ideas about why all is not lost. And that's true. I do have some ideas. It's definitely a bad period. It's a grim period. We know about how the media is being cowed by the media, which has the job of being the watchdogs, are being cowed by bloggers and know-nothings and now the government by throwing journalists into jail who don't reveal their sources and so forth. So it's, and the American public has demonstrated that it's been uneducated and miseducated and is easily propagandized too. So you could say, well, it's looking kind of grim. Maybe we should think about what people did in